Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotloff, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. Over the next 18 episodes, we're going to cover everything you need to know about low testosterone. Today, we're starting with the foundation. What is low testosterone? Symptoms and lab cutoffs. This matters because most men hear two bad versions of the same story. One version says, your number is low, so you need treatment. The other says, your number is inside the lab range, so you're fine. Both can be wrong. In clinic, I see this every week. A man comes in tired, less motivated, not recovering from workouts the way he used to, libido down, erections less reliable, body composition drifting in the wrong direction. He's been told either that he definitely has low T from one random lab, or that he definitely doesn't because a computer printed the word normal next to his result. Medicine is usually a little messier than that. The clinical definition is simple, even if the workup is not. Low testosterone, or male hypogonadism, is a syndrome. That means it requires both persistent symptoms and biochemical evidence of testosterone deficiency, not one or the other, both. That one distinction clears up a lot. A low lab number by itself is not a diagnosis. If a man feels well, has no sexual symptoms, no energy issues, no body composition change, no relevant signs, treating a number alone can turn normal life into a medical hobby. On the other hand, symptoms alone are not enough either, because fatigue, brain fog, low mood, poor sleep, weaker gym performance, and sexual symptoms can come from a long list of things besides testosterone. Sleep apnea, stress, depression, medications, thyroid problems, metabolic issues, too little sleep, and too much confidence in pre-workout. The usual modern mix. When I was earlier in training, I used to think the reference range solved most of this. If the number was inside the range, that was reassuring. I was wrong. The reference range is a statistical tool. It is not a diagnosis machine. What we actually care about is whether a man has persistent symptoms that fit testosterone deficiency, and whether accurate hormone testing supports that. At Vidma, when symptoms persist, we use 350 nanograms per deciliter for total testosterone and 100 picograms per milliliter for free testosterone as decision thresholds. That does not mean 349 is broken and 351 is perfect. Biology is not that dramatic. It means those are practical clinical cut points, interpreted in context. A man at 280 is clearly low. A man at 320 is not someone I dismiss with a shrug. He needs a better look, especially if symptoms have been there for a while and free testosterone is reduced. The word persistent matters more than most people realize. Testosterone is not a tattoo. It changes. It falls after poor sleep. It falls during acute illness. It can dip with calorie restriction, hard training, heavy stress, and just being run down. If you do your lab after a red-eye flight, 3 nights of bad sleep, and a stomach bug, I've learned not to treat that as a profound truth about your endocrine system. One of the more common stories I hear is some version of this. I got labs done after a rough week and my testosterone was low, so I figured that explained everything. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it absolutely does not. That is why proper testing is done in the morning, ideally between 07 RARS and 11 SIRS, and why borderline or unexpected results should be repeated under stable conditions. In younger men especially, levels can be 20 to 30% higher earlier in the day. Timing is not a detail. It changes interpretation. The Endocrine Society and European guidance are aligned on the big picture. Symptoms matter. Accurate assays matter. Morning testing matters. Repeat testing matters. The disagreements people obsess over are usually about exact numbers and emphasis, not the basic framework. And that framework is this. A diagnosis of male hypogonadism requires a pattern. The symptom side of the pattern is worth slowing down for a minute. The symptoms that tend to be most specific are sexual symptoms, reduced libido, erectile dysfunction, fewer morning erections, in the European male aging study, the syndrome showed up most clearly when low testosterone traveled with that sexual symptom pattern. That does not mean sexual symptoms are the only ones that count. It means they make the picture more convincing. The rest of the picture can include low energy, reduced vitality, lower motivation, worse recovery, low mood, more fat gain around the middle, less lean mass, and just that vague sense that the engine isn't pulling the way it used to. Men describe this in very practical ways. I can still get through the day, but it feels like I'm doing it in second gear. Or, I'm training, but I'm not adapting. Or, I'm sleeping, but I don't wake up restored. Those are not diagnostic by themselves, but they matter. A useful analogy is a car. You would not replace the engine because one warning light flickered once, and you would not ignore a loud knocking sound just because the dashboard looked calm. Symptoms and objective testing have to agree with each other. Now, why do lab ranges and real life so often fail to line up? Part of it is assay quality. Most labs still use immunoassays for testosterone, and those are not identical to more accurate methods. At VIDMA, we prioritize total testosterone measured by LC-MS/MS and free testosterone measured directly by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS/MS. That last part matters a lot. Free testosterone is the part that is not bound up and is readily available to tissues. Only about 2-3% of circulating testosterone is free. A large percentage is bound tightly to SHBG, and another large portion is loosely bound to albumin. So total testosterone can look acceptable on paper, while the biologically available fraction is lower than it should be. This is one of the biggest reasons men with the same total testosterone can feel very different. Think of total testosterone as everyone on the roster. Free testosterone is who is actually on the field. Two teams can have the same number of players under contract, but if one team has more guys in the locker room, that changes the game. I remember one patient recently, early 40s, lean, disciplined, slept pretty well, exercised regularly. His total testosterone looked fine by the lazy standard. He had been told that for months, but his symptoms were classic. Libido down, morning erections noticeably less frequent, recovery poor, motivation flat. When we looked at free testosterone properly, that told the real story much better than total testosterone alone. He wasn't imagining it, and he wasn't a man who needed to be told to meditate more and stop reading the internet. This is why I get uneasy when someone says, "My total testosterone was normal, so low testosterone was ruled out." No, not necessarily. A normal total testosterone does not always mean tissue-level androgen activity is normal. That is exactly why free testosterone testing matters, especially when the clinical picture and the total number do not match. A 2016 paper in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism made this point nicely. Men with low free testosterone could have signs and symptoms of hypogonadism even when total testosterone was normal. Clinically, that fits what many of us see. Now, a quick clarification. We do not order SHBG as a separate test in our standard workup. A lot of places estimate free testosterone from other values. We prefer measuring free testosterone directly by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS/MS, which avoids the guesswork of a calculated value and avoids needing a separate SHBG calculation. If you can measure the thing that matters directly, that is usually better medicine. There is another reason two men can feel different at the same total testosterone. Tissue sensitivity is not identical from one man to the next. Androgen receptor signaling varies. Genetics plays some role. That does not mean we throw up our hands and call everything individualized magic. It just means a single total testosterone value is not the full story. Alright, once you've established that symptoms are persistent and the lab picture supports testosterone deficiency, the next question is the one many clinics skip. Where is the problem starting? This is where LH and FSH are non-negotiable. If those are not measured alongside testosterone, you cannot properly classify hypogonadism, and if you cannot classify it, you cannot choose the right treatment. I'm not being dramatic here. This is probably the most common workup mistake I see. Men come in with a testosterone value, maybe an estradiol, maybe a CBC, and nothing else. No LH, no FSH. That is like opening the hood halfway, glancing at the battery, and declaring the whole car repaired. The brain, meaning the hypothalamus and pituitary, sends signals through LH and FSH. The testes respond by producing testosterone and supporting sperm production. If testosterone is low and LH is high, that points toward primary hypogonadism. The brain is signaling hard, and the testes are not responding well. If testosterone is low and LH is low or normal, that points toward secondary hypogonadism. The brain is not sending a strong enough signal. Functional hypogonadism is the very common real-world version of that, where the axis is intact but suppressed by things like obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, poor sleep, medications, illness, or general metabolic stress. Same testosterone number. Different disease. I've had men come in with nearly identical total testosterone values, say around 310, and completely different treatment pathways. One has high LH, clearly pushing the testes hard already. Stimulating the axis more is not going to solve failing testicular function. Another has an LH of 3. That man may have secondary or functional hypogonadism, which means the testes may still work quite well if the signal is restored. That distinction is not academic. It decides whether a man may need a testosterone replacement or whether he may be a good candidate for enclomiphene. For secondary and functional hypogonadism, especially when LH is below 8 μU per ml, enclomiphene is our first-line treatment. It works by blocking estrogen feedback at the hypothalamus, which increases GnRH and LH, allowing the testes to make more of their own testosterone. The appeal is pretty obvious. It preserves spermatogenesis and fertility. It maintains testicular size and function. It works with the body's own regulation. It may be discontinued in some men if the underlying suppression improves, and it tends to carry a lower hematocrit risk than testosterone replacement. That makes it especially useful in the men we see most often, which is functional hypogonadism. Men whose axis is suppressed, not destroyed. Lifestyle changes matter here too. Weight loss, better sleep, treating metabolic issues, cleaning up medications where possible. All good, all worth doing. But I want to be honest about this, because men are usually tired of fake certainty by the time they speak with me. Lifestyle alone can help, but the testosterone increase is often modest, and long-term maintenance is hard. Many men regain a large portion of lost weight within a few years. So for functional hypogonadism, the practical approach is often enclomiphene plus lifestyle work, not a sermon about discipline. Primary hypogonadism is different. If LH is high and testosterone is low, the testes are already being told to work and are not responding. In that setting, enclomiphene is not the answer. Testosterone replacement is usually the treatment category that makes sense there, and also in secondary hypogonadism that does not respond to enclomiphene. It is important treatment for the right man, but it suppresses gonadotropins and spermatogenesis, which is why it is the wrong choice for a man who wants fertility. It is also not something Viedma prescribes. We focus on a thorough diagnostic workup and fertility-preserving treatment plans built around enclomiphene when appropriate. I'll add one point here because the internet is not subtle. Testosterone replacement is not for optimization, bodybuilding, or anti-aging in men with normal testosterone. It is for documented hypogonadism. And if a man is worried that even discussing testosterone replacement means automatic heart attacks or prostate cancer, that is outdated shorthand. The Travers trial, which followed about 5,000 men for roughly 33 months, found testosterone therapy was non-inferior to placebo for major cardiovascular events and did not show increased prostate cancer risk. That does not make it casual. Hematocrit still needs monitoring, and fertility suppression is still real. It just means fear and hype are equally unhelpful. Now zoom out for a minute. Why do we care this much about testosterone in the first place? Because testosterone acts across the whole body. It affects sexual function, yes, but also lean mass, fat distribution, bone health, red blood cell production, mood, energy, motivation, and overall vitality. Severe or prolonged deficiency can contribute to anemia, low bone density, increased fat mass, reduced lean mass, and poorer quality of life. That is why reducing the whole conversation to, "Do you want better gym pumps?" misses the point by a mile. Men often come in talking about one symptom because it feels safer. They'll mention workout recovery or body fat first. Sometimes they'll lead with libido, but when you talk for a bit longer, the story usually broadens. Mood is flatter. Motivation is lower. Sleep feels less restorative. Work feels harder. They are not necessarily depressed. They are not necessarily lazy. Something systemic is off. That word matters. Systemic. Testosterone deficiency is not a cosmetic issue. It is not a branding concept. It is a multi-system clinical condition. A lot of guys hear all of this and still get tripped up in the same few places, so let me clean up the most common mistakes. The first is thinking, my total testosterone is above the lab's lower limit, so low testosterone is ruled out. It isn't. If symptoms are persistent, you repeat morning testing, and you look at free testosterone with an accurate method. A man with total testosterone around 400 can still have a meaningful deficiency picture if free testosterone is low and the symptoms fit. The second mistake is the opposite. I had one low result, so I definitely have hypogonadism. Also, no, one low result starts the evaluation. It does not finish it. Repeat the test in the morning, when you are not sick, not sleep deprived, not in the middle of a crash diet, and not coming off a week that looked like a hostage negotiation with your calendar. The third mistake is assuming all fatigue is testosterone. It isn't. I say this as someone who treats low testosterone every week. If your sleep is terrible, your stress is extreme, your breathing stops at night, your thyroid is off, or your medication list is sabotaging you, you can feel awful with normal testosterone. Good endocrine workup is not about forcing every symptom into one answer. The fourth mistake is treating LH and FSH like optional bonus labs. They are not optional. If low testosterone is confirmed and nobody checked LH and FSH, nobody has properly defined the disease. High LH plus low testosterone means primary hypogonadism. Low or normal LH plus low testosterone means secondary. That single distinction changes treatment completely. And the fifth mistake is assuming every treatment path is the same. It is not. Men with secondary or functional hypogonadism and LH below 8 are often candidates for enclomiphene, which can restore natural testosterone production while preserving fertility. Men with primary hypogonadism usually are not. You cannot guess your way through that. If you want the practical version, do four things. First, pay attention to persistent symptoms, especially libido, erectile quality, morning erections, energy, motivation, recovery, and body composition changes. Not one weird week. Persistent change. Second, test correctly. Morning draw, 07 zers to 11 zer. Repeat if the result is low or borderline, and do it under stable conditions. Third, make sure the workup is complete. That means total testosterone by LCMS/MS, free testosterone by equilibrium dialysis with LCMS/MS, plus LH and FSH. Our men's health panel also includes estradiol, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, PSA for men 40 and up, and insulin when BMI is over 25. We add prolactin or thyroid testing when clinically indicated. Fourth, do not accept treatment or dismissal based on a single number. The question is not, is this result inside a lab range? The question is, do symptoms and accurate labs together show testosterone deficiency? And where is the problem starting? That is the foundation for everything else in this series. Once you understand that low testosterone is a syndrome, not a number, the rest starts to make sense. Next time, we'll get into low testosterone by age, what's normal at 20, 30, 40, 50, and beyond. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you. Upload your labs to Viedma for free or order labs through our special offer at Viedma.com.